The opinions expressed on the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of KTXT, its management, Texas Tech University, or any living person. This is the Devil's Advocate.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Devil's Advocate, a nice, beautiful Wednesday afternoon, I'd say. Please join the conversation, as always, on The Raider. This is The Raider 88.1. Join us on Twitter. Just search The Raider 88.1. You can find us on Facebook, The Raider 88.1. Today we have Jordan Legend. I've apparently been pronouncing it wrong this whole time. Been corrected.
You and the rest of the population of the city.
But I think we got it right this time. Matthew Riley, as always, is here. And, of course, Dr. K.
Guns up.
Sequestered in the other room for
isolated.
Our safety in his.
Only until the shutdown ends. Then I can come back.
Okay.
He's in timeout.
Obviously a very exciting week for us politicos.
It's exciting enough to keep Evan awake, which is interesting because he hasn't slept since, what, like Thursday?
I know, right? It's just all this homework. I have this one teacher.
I hate when school gets in the way of school, don't you hate that?
Yeah, exactly. I have this one professor that teaches my
Go ahead.
Oh, wait, no, that was you.
I thought it was me, yeah, okay.
But a very exciting week, obviously, in D.C. and all over the world. We have a little montage kind of to get the day started and set the mood. So let's go ahead and play that. Today we actually have Jasmine Moore kind of halfway controlling it.
Woo-hoo!
Along controlling our sound system and whatnot, the board, as they call it.
With help from Jorge Macias.
With
and it's gonna
expertise
take the,
guidance.
It's going to take the two of them to keep up with us today.
So let's go ahead and roll it.
Late word from the Pentagon this evening confirming that a daring U.S. military operation inside Somalia has targeted the terror group behind the deadly Kenya Mall attack. U.S. Special Operations Forces, led by Navy SEALs, staged the overnight raid in what's described as an al-Shabaab stronghold. And there is also word tonight a senior al-Qaeda leader has been captured or killed in a separate incident in Libya.
U.S. Navy SEALs hit the beach in southern Somalia and attacked a compound of the al-Shabaab militant organization in the town of Barawi.
Yesterday, our personnel in the armed forces conducted two operations in order to continue to hunt down those responsible for acts of terrorism.
In Libya, Anas al-Libi, the terrorist and mastermind behind the 1998 U.S. embassy bombings in East Africa, has been captured.
And hours earlier, Navy SEALs sneaking into Somalia, their target, a high-level al-Shabaab operative linked to the Mall massacre in Kenya.
In Somalia, the mission was led by members of SEAL Team 6, the same unit, of course, that killed Osama bin Laden. The target in Libya was a key al-Qaeda operative that the U.S. had been looking for years.
Napalm, son! Nothing else in the world smells like that! Smells like... victory!
That was the montage, obviously capturing Abu Anas al-Libi.
You know who was flying that lead Huey? You know who was piloting that lead Huey?
No.
Who? President Obama, and he was the gunner on the side. Both. Both.
Thank you, Obama.
Absolutely.
Everyone was
remember when the Republicans tried to say that the president was weak on foreign policy and weak on terrorists? Do we remember when that was a thing?
I do.
I think we can put that to bed now, can't we?
Come on, other than these two attacks and keeping Gitmo open and taking out Osama bin Laden, what's he accomplished?
Absolutely
in
nothing.
I mean, come on.
He's such a failure.
I'm gently conceding the point to Jordan, who, as usual, disgracefully often comes up with a valid, intriguing point. So
we liberals are the smartest. As they say, the truth has a liberal bias.
Am I going to have to remind you who's the only person in the room with multiple college degrees? Okay, you go ahead and run
You
with
always
that.
We'll do, see. Dr. K. Yeah. You always do.
Okay, you catch up with me in a few years, and then we'll talk about who's smart. There are smart folks on both sides, and there are folks not so bright on both sides.
But that,
I give you Michael Moore.
That doesn't make for as fun arguing.
Which side is he on?
Well, that's true. The default position.
The smarter or the...
Yeah. Well, guys, I mean, we're looking at the good side of this raid, but let's not forget we also had a failed raid in Somalia. What does that make us? 2 for 2 on failed raids in Somalia, along with the infamous Black Hawk Down situation? I mean, it seems like things just don't go well in that country for us.
You know, so this is Barrawe, southern Somalia. It's on the coast, and it's not a place you want to go hang out at the beach. It's just, there are some huge issues there. Lots and lots of heavy weapons floating around in that country. So let me catch you up, in case you weren't clear. You did hear it in the news reports in the montage. But what happened, basically, two attacks over the weekend. The team that Matthew's talking about was a Delta Force team. And they, oh, I'm sorry, look, let me back up. It's the SEAL Team 6. So
yes.
SEAL Team 6 actually had some issues this time. They're the ones that went into Barrawe, Somalia. They were going after the guy who heads Al-Shabaab. And this was the group that attacked that shopping mall, killed many people just recently, and was a huge outcry nationally. And this was the response. And the president actually said a couple weeks ago, while that was active, that this could not stand. And they went after this guy who's a leader of that organization. It's Muhammad Abdul Qadir. Abdul Qadir Muhammad Abdul Qadir. He fortunately has a nickname which I did not come up with, but people call him Ikrima, which is much more manageable. So we'll call him Ikrima. But anyway, they went after him. He heads up Al-Shabaab. They tried to get him, but they couldn't pull it off. So,
well, it sounds like from the reports that are coming out recently, they rode up in their boats and whatnot on the beach. There was a man in the backyard smoking a cigarette, and he noticed SEAL team coming up to the beach, acted very casually, went back in the house, and then told everyone. And then, of course, the militants inside the house came out and obviously overwhelmed the SEAL team.
From what I've heard from reports, it seems like the SEAL team encountered what appeared to be a heavy civilian population, lots of women and children in the area. So the SEAL team had to switch its parameters up and called for an evac situation because they could not afford civilian casualties. So in that route, you can see that it was a manageable call. I think the distinction should be known that it was a manageable call.
Well, that's a good call and an excellent point you point out, Matthew, which is this is a new policy among the U.S. military. And actually, the commander on the scene had the option of calling in more forces, including an airstrike. Not only backed off on that, but told them to retreat because there were so many civilians present. And that's a fairly new policy that has just gone into effect. This is the first really high-profile incident of it happening. And their mission was to capture or kill Ikrima and try to take him out. And they got away without doing that. But it was a strategic withdrawal. They actually retreated back into the sea to get away. And it's because of what Matthew said. There were so many civilians there that they didn't want to have these secondary casualties.
No, I'm just shocked that they didn't end up using another Predator drone. It seemed to become a norm in almost U.S. foreign policy to hopefully we don't have any children, but regrettably we will. So it seemed like we're switching tactics. There hasn't been a raid this big since Osama bin Laden was assassinated. In fact, different team, but it was still an elite operation unit. But still, it seems like President Obama is starting to get quite a couple of missions under his belt.
Well, yeah, see, Bill Clinton would have lobbed in a cruise missile and had the had the tail wag the dog, but Barack Obama, he's packing.
Lord, I feel like that shot was taken just for me.
Clearly.
I would like to just point out, going back to something that was said earlier, I've also heard the story about the guy going out to smoke a cigarette and then seeing the SEAL team and then being able to warn everyone. So don't ever let anyone tell you that cigarettes can't save lives.
Ooh, nicely done.
Very nice, very nice.
You know, and I was also thinking, had we sent ninjas instead of SEALs, wouldn't have been a problem.
I thought the Delta Force and Ninja, I find it very interchangeable. In fact, I've never found the differentiation because the military claims Delta Force is its own secret super elite unit, but then it involves members from the Rangers, the SEALs and whatnot. I mean, it's a very elite organization, which they seem to sort of label on these super dangerous missions.
Well, yeah, so the best of the best of the best.
Of the best.
Yeah, it's just kind of a, you know, those are just amorphous. It's just to help build the legend.
So what's the over-under on how long it takes for the Republicans to actually blame this failure on Obama?
Oh, no, it's clearly his fault that we were wimpy and withdrew from the beach. It was a wimpy thing to do that no Republican would ever have.
Exactly. If George Bush would have still been in office, we'd have invaded some other country by now.
Exactly.
That had nothing to do with it.
If George Bush was still president, we would have sent the whole Navy, 1,000 men, probably the entire Air Force. That's what we would have done.
There you go. It would have been properly handled like the operation.
A proper military invasion.
So the Tripoli attack over the weekend probably was organized by a more conservative Republican general. So let me tell you about that one. So the other group, the Delta Force, they went into Tripoli, the capital of Libya, right downtown. Hooded men ran up, half a dozen of them, and grabbed this guy, Abu Anas al-Libi, and he's long been linked to al-Qaeda. 15 years, was responsible for a couple of notorious, brutal, vicious attacks that killed a couple hundred people in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and in Nairobi, Kenya in 1998. Two, a couple of minutes apart, two huge bombings at U.S. embassies that killed hundreds of locals, especially hundreds of Kenyans. A dozen Americans also died in that attack. So this guy was an early al-Qaeda leader, Libby, who was involved in that attack. Right now, he's no longer in his house in Libya, in Tripoli. He's actually got, I'm sure, a nice, comfortable room with a view of a waterboard on board the USS San Antonio off the coast out in the Mediterranean. And by the way, what could be more appropriate for an attack like this than to put him on a ship named for a city in Texas?
Jordan, I know San Antonio is your favorite city in Texas. The people of San Antonio think that the USS San Antonio is the greatest ship in the world, just like they think their city can do no wrong. Get over yourself, people from San Antonio. Get over yourself.
DQ. That's what I love about Texas. Okay, we were talking about the what was the word you used? Confidence, pride that Texans have describing their city?
I don't understand it.
Maybe it was arrogance. I can't remember what word we were using.
They all fit.
Sorry. Okay, we just lost some listeners on the radio show.
Oh, goodness.
If we haven't already. Less people who might attack me for my overly liberal views.
Well, before we get too much more into discussing the what we feel about both the raids, let's take a little break, and we'll be back in just a minute. This is the Devil's Advocate on the Raider 88.1. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocate, the Raider 88.1. I'm Evan Dixon, along with Matthew and George and Dr. K.
George? Who the hell is George?
I don't know why I said George. Jorge. Jordan.
We were just talking about...
I got them a little confused.
Yeah. Jorge goes by George, and you've been voted off the island.
I am okay with that, as long as there's a floating raft that I can sleep on.
So you were talking in the break about enhanced interrogation technique includes perhaps sleep deprivation.
Yes.
So does that work, Evan? Are you more susceptible now?
I feel like college is enhanced interrogation.
Clearly he is. He's calling people George when no Georges exist.
Exactly.
So.
I'll tell you anything. Just please let me sleep.
Yeah, quick. One of you guys ask him something sensitive and see what he says. It's okay, Evan. Nobody will hear.
Well, let's segue back into the news somewhat. So of course, the Al Libby that was captured and is now on USS San Antonio.
If it's related to Scooter Libby, I'm just curious.
Will not be able. They won't be able to use enhanced interrogation on him, which is waterboard. They still can do obviously sleep deprivation, whatnot. So what do you guys think? Do you think that'll affect how much information we can get out of him?
Well, you said sleep deprivation includes strobe lights and loud noises. And as any of my roommates can attest to, people can sleep through that, because I certainly could.
Nicely done.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it, I'm just curious at overall the DOD's definition of enhanced interrogation techniques, because they've gotten away before in the past with using techniques which, by many standards, have been considered torture. I mean, you've got climate control where you set the temperature to really low to really high, essentially make somebody get a fever. I mean, I remember back a couple of years ago, I heard a reporter, he allowed a couple buddies of him to test out whether it was an advanced interrogation technique. He came out of the room and was like, oh yeah, that's torture. So I don't know about this whole torture thing. They may just get enough information out of them, because they can slip out of it very easily.
So, Jordan, isn't summer in southern Louisiana, isn't that climate torture right there?
It is. You walk outside and you instantly feel like death, because the humidity just hits you right in the face.
Yeah.
It's pretty awful.
15 years in Miami, I'm not a fan of that. I understand. So I think I will say this. Whatever we do find out from Libby, we'll all know pretty quickly, because the president will trot out the information as fast as he possibly can, like he did after the bin Laden raid. I think we can count on that.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Aren't the right wingers still claiming that Osama bin Laden isn't really dead until we see photos of the rotting corpse?
Yeah.
pretty sure that's happened.
Yeah, but those photos exist. They're in the same drawer as the president's birth certificate. So just need to get in that drawer and we'll be all set.
That drawer. God.
Yeah, I'm staying out of it. I will say, speaking of conservatives, I think a conservative may have had something to do with Libby being captured. And I'll tell you why. Because there was a $5 million bounty on his head. And I think, you know, any Republican's going to jump at that.
Oh, absolutely.
They could use it to pay their staff during the shutdown. Yeah.
And I wonder, does FBI bounties count as capital gains so that they don't have to pay any taxes on it?
Well, it's okay, because if they put it wherever Mitt Romney keeps his money offshore in the Caymans, I think they'll be immune from having to pay the taxes.
Exactly.
So it's okay.
It's international currency. It doesn't have to go through taxes.
So yeah, very nice.
It's a sweet, solid pay deal.
God bless America.
And Swiss banks.
So Matthew was bringing up another point I thought was interesting about, well, you know what? I'm getting ahead of myself. The administration came out and had a statement, and I'll go ahead and toss to this. John Kerry came out and represented the administration's position on this, which is interesting, because I think in the past, the president has been more interested in taking the lead and talking about this stuff. It's kind of a hint, dare I say this, it's a hint that the president may actually just be trying to execute the duties of the executive office and not do it for credit, and let John Kerry come out and do it. I'll tell you before you hear this, because it's just kind of amusing. John Kerry was out on like some boat dock when he gave this statement. He seemed completely unprepared. There are weird noises like dogs barking, and there just really isn't kind of the sort of heft you'd expect from a top administration secretary, a cabinet secretary. Now, that said, I've ruined it for you, but let's go ahead and listen to John Kerry speaking about
these. Really painted the picture for us.
Yeah, I tried.
I've got a visual image in my head right now.
Yesterday, our personnel in the armed forces conducted two operations in order to continue to hunt down those responsible for acts of terrorism. And I want to thank and congratulate the quality and courage of those young Americans who took part in those operations. We hope that this makes clear that the United States of America will never stop in its effort to hold those accountable who conduct acts of terror, and those members of Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations literally can run, but they can't hide. We will continue to try to bring people to justice in an appropriate way, with hopes that ultimately these kinds of activities against everybody in the world will stop. But we all are very, very grateful to those in the armed forces of the United States who conducted these operations. We thank them. We're glad they're safe, and we're pleased with the results of that operation.
That was that right outside the kennel in D.C.?
I recognize that dog. That was Barney. That was George Bush's dog. Oh. I recognize the voice.
Gentlemen, you're both wrong. Clearly he was taking
place. The ghost
place.
Of Barney.
Clearly he was taking place in the raid in Somalia. Didn't you guys hear that gunfire? I mean, that was...
I heard. Yes, I did.
I was wondering how long it would take a Republican to say that we should actually be thanking George Bush for all this, because isn't that what happened when Osama bin Laden was killed? This is actually all because of George W. Bush.
You're exactly right. In fact, he's responsible for our economic malaise 5 years later, and he's responsible for Osama bin Laden's. They say for the next 10, 15 years, anything good or bad that happens, it's Bush's fault.
Well, one of those statements is accurate. I'll let you decide which.
Going back to the Somalia raid, do you guys thinks the fact that our intelligence is obviously off on how many people we thought we were going to be there, and obviously the amount of civilians in the house. Do you guys think this hurts us with Al-Shabaab, a very up-and-coming terrorist organization?
I honestly do not think that this was in any way the fault of the intelligence. I mean, sometimes operations just go bad. Sometimes there are certain factors, certain variables that you can't just control in an operation of this scale. What happened during this operation were things that couldn't have been controlled. The mission had to shift parameters, and clearly it didn't go the way they expected them. I don't blame their team for pulling out. I believe they made the right call in it. I believe they behaved in accordance with a correct U.S. foreign policy approach, and I believe they approached the situation very adequately. I don't think this sort of shows any lack of intelligence in the U.S. intelligence sector, because I mean they did everything they could, honestly.
Well, it's highly relevant to this new policy. So in fact, initially, they talked about doing a drone strike. They considered a drone strike risky because there'd be too many non-combatant injuries. This policy explicitly, this is what the president signed in the spring, so really the first time it's been applied since this policy passed just a few months ago, it explicitly says there has to be a near certainty that non-combatants will not be injured or killed. It's why they scratched a drone strike. That's also why the SEALs withdrew from the coast. Now, there is an argument, I think, to be made that this is going to send a signal to groups that have no such ethical guidelines that the U.S. is going to be, that's going to turn the U.S. into a paper tiger. My guess is, well, you know, I just don't know. I wonder how, for example, SEAL team members feel about that policy. I can't say they're all gung-ho and oppose it. They may well support it.
Well, the way, I don't know, I personally don't know how individual SEAL, Navy SEALs feel about this, but I do, there's a famous saying I'd like to use. It's, you can't control what the other guy's going to do, but you can always control what you are going to do. I mean, just because these people are going to use unethical methods doesn't mean we have to keep deploying drones to attack innocent civilians. I believe it was the right call, and I believe any ethical human would be. If we now
I'm out.
So I didn't mean to guilt trip you. I'm so sorry, sir.
Well, I was going to say the same thing, sort of. Call me a weak, wimpy, America-hating liberal.
Okay.
Ooh.
But I would rather my government allow 100 dangerous terrorists to get away if it meant saving one civilian life. So the fact that we decided that these civilian lives are more important than this one terrorist actually makes me very proud of those people in command. That's what America should do.
But doesn't this just send a message to all terrorists out there? Just go collect the local youth and put them in on your front porch, and we won't
be
able to attack you.
You mean like they were doing anyways?
Well, there's an argument to be made for that. If you guys probably won't remember the original Gulf War, 1991, Saddam Hussein.
Someone's old.
Yes, someone is. Saddam
Gulf
Hussein.
War, what's that?
Not only do I remember that, but I was an adult working in a newsroom, so I'm really old and clearly remember.
Try not to have a heart attack on the air.
Exactly. Quick, where's more coffee? We were covering this, and not only did Saddam Hussein. He had, for example, he'd put on the roof of civilian buildings anti-aircraft weaponry, and then he would have folks go up there and hang out. And some Americans agreed to go be human shields because they were against U.S. Participating in the first Gulf War. And that was more clear cut. That was after Iraq had invaded Kuwait, had rolled in there. And so that fighting took place not eventually in Baghdad, but initially in Kuwait across the border. So,
yes. And that was under Bush's father, yeah. Bush Sr.
41, exactly.
Exactly. I mean, that type of situation, especially, and I mean,
it's not a new thing.
But I think a full-blown war is different than a simple raid or operation like this. In a full-blown war, you're going to accept civilian casualties, not because you want to, but because that's war. That's what happens. When it's a raid like this, I think you have to have a little bit more leeway of deciding, okay, is this one person worth killing innocent civilians?
I have to agree with Jordan. It's the difference between dropping a bomb on a hospital to kill one guy and dropping a bomb in a military facility and killing a janitor. There are clear distinctions, and there are clear reasons for your target and what you're actually targeting in those reasons.
It's also, and this is an important distinction that Jordan was trying to make, it's also the difference between Al-Shabaab and the United States of America. And I think that's a very important consideration to always remember.
Absolutely,
because if we do things, then they can turn around and do them to our own people. That's always, the Republicans seem to be in the spirit of bringing up things that have already been debated for thousands of hours. So I'll bring up this debate. If we use enhanced interrogation, or if we just, you know, bomb willy-nilly and don't care who we kill, then
wait,
that
who's
gives
willy-nilly? I've never
willy. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm letting my Cajun show.
I like it.
Next, I'll be calling you all Sha. You know, if we go around just killing people indiscriminately, then that gives our enemies license to do that to us, and that's something we never want to allow.
Well, I think, and I don't want to speak for Matthew, but the point you were trying to make is, or actually Evan earlier, is are we going to make people more mad? We're certainly not going to make people less mad. I think there's almost no proper way for us to behave to actually appease these folks. You know?
Well, I mean, you bring up a very good point, especially with Libya, I'm terribly sorry. Especially with Libya going through its interim government. That government has not the highest legitimacy right now. It's basically NATO backed, essentially. So the fact that the Libyan people see that they cannot deal with their own criminals in their own country, it kind of, if I were a Libyan citizen, I'd be completely upset at this raid.
But doesn't it make a difference, even going back to what you just said, Dr. K? Don't we have an American ideal that we like to think we stand up to, that we're the beacon of light in the rest of the world? So doesn't our own national psyche require us to try not to kill civilians?
I didn't know that requires, but it is an issue that the president has been very sensitive to. It's why he promised to close Guantanamo Bay. And here's where I get in trouble with my friends on the right. I always recognize the subtlety and complexity in these issues. You know, he intended to close the detention center at Gitmo, got into office and found that solution was problematic, and it wasn't as simple as he thought it would be. And again, I'm not taking sides on this one, but he has been vocally, openly conscious of that image of the U.S. has certain standards, certain ethical mores on the world stage. He's been much more conscious of and vocal of that than the president, whichever side of that you fall on. And so that's why he would sign a policy such as let's stand down and be much more careful than we have been in the past about civilian casualties.
There are still a lot of people on the left who are upset with him about not closing Gitmo,
right.
So that's still an issue, to you know, a completely different issue at the moment.
Well, and a legitimate one. And there are other modern examples of what Matthew pointed out, which is the inherent weakness in this new policy, which is, well, let's all just go get some human shields. I mean, Qassam rockets fly out of the West Bank and into Israel. from the top of apartment buildings where families live. And it's just a common strategy that gets used in different places around the world. Hey, that's a nice segue to our next topic. Maybe we should take a break.
Oh, man.
We should take a break and then come back perhaps and move on to our next topic. Any objections?
That sounds good.
Okay, let's do that. We'll talk to you in a couple
after
minutes. Welcome back, everyone, to the Devil's Advocate on the Raider 88.1. Join the conversation on Facebook or Twitter. Just search the Raider 88.1. You can tweet us, hashtag it, just search us anywhere. We're all connected.
Has Anna gotten any date invitations? Do we know about that?
I still don't think anything has come
of that. Well, why do you think she's not here, guys?
Oh, hey,
maybe
good point.
Just lunch.
She had
an
appointment.
Yeah, or brunch, as Republicans would like to address it.
Yeah, there you go.
Now we're going to move on to...
My dad likes to say on his answering machine, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. He's Irish. That means he's drinking at 9 in the morning.
Oh, I feel him. I understand.
We're going to move on to Iran, obviously. The new president, Hassan Rouhani, was in New York this past week.
Seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they're saying all over the media. Well, that's true. Well,
and the liberal media lapdogs are just eating it up.
Exactly. Thank you.
Well, it's really hard to be worse than President Ahmadinejad, who called for the absolute annihilation of Israel. So, I mean, of course it's a step up. I mean, you could get a murderer in prison and it'd be a step up from Ahmadinejad.
Which, of course, we have to remember. I'd like to start the conversation with this in reminding our listeners that the president of Iran has absolutely no power whatsoever.
Yes.
So why we pay so much attention to these people does not make any sense to me.
Glorious Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. I mean, he's the one who makes the calls.
If your first name is not Ayatollah in that country, you really have no authority.
Exactly. Yet that liberal media, man, they paid so much attention to Ahmadinejad, had the whole country in fear, yet he had no power ever. It's so sad.
Yeah, but sorry, Dr. K.
No, that's okay. Well, I was going to say, a really compelling visit over the weekend. One of Matthew's, I'm going to watch Matthew stir and boil in his chair when I say this. Bibi Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, current Prime Minister of Israel, current and former and again, essentially Supreme Leader of Israel, came around and said that he wasn't buying Rouhani's charm offensive going around the world. And Rouhani, there's no mistake at all, has been much more diplomatic than Ahmadinejad ever felt felt the need to be. And so Rouhani's been going around meeting folks. He was at the UN, glad-handing, smiling. He's reached out to folks in the West. He sent a tweet in honor of one of the Jewish holidays, wishing people the best. But Netanyahu says this is an old pattern for his, that he actually was in charge of escorting nuclear weapons inspectors in the past in Iran, and that they were all charmed by his diplomacy, and that he wrote a book talking about how he'd scammed everybody with this fake charm, allowing them to proceed unabated with their weapons programs because he was able to throw them off the scent with a smile and a wink. So what do you think? I know you're a big fan of the Israeli prime minister.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had to contain myself not to interrupt you, Dr. K. Only Netanyahu would be the only person I know alive who would be like, oh, okay, we're trying diplomacy. That's not going to work. He's the only person who I know. I mean, President Hassan Rouhani, yes, as Jordan has said, he does not have any power whatsoever. Ali Khamenei is the one with power. But I mean, only Benjamin would be the one to state that it is a bad thing that we are trying to negotiate. I mean, sure, we may not get anything out of this negotiation, but it's a step. But it seems like he's cautioning these negotiations as if we were to enter them. It's like, look out, this can only end in failure. They've got a gun to your back or something like that. I don't know. I think he's just being very paranoid. I've never been a fan of the prime minister.
Well, not to compare Netanyahu to Ahmadinejad, and that wouldn't be fair.
But
on measures of a big helping of diplomacy, they're kind of on equal footing, I think, you know. Netanyahu has not been at all welcoming, warming of the leadership, at least in Iran, any more than he has been with the leadership of the Palestinians over the years.
He has not been welcoming to several groups, yeah. Also Palestinians, might I add.
Not the most tolerant of leaders in that country.
No, sir. I mean, this guy... It just upsets me. This man, I've always understood this idea of Israel trying to defend himself after the acquisition of their homeworld during the Great War. But it seems like Netanyahu takes this to a whole nother level. He views diplomacy of any sort of negotiation whatsoever, as just a trick. He's a very cynical person. He views war politics as more as a boxing match and less of a negotiation. It just, I fail to see his point in how simply President Obama having a 17-minute conversation with President Hassan Rouhani is a bad thing. I fail to see that.
Well, and now it's fair, I think, to also remember Netanyahu's history with the Six Days War, the issues with Egypt over the years. I mean, this guy's been at the point of the spear, and so he's earned it. He knows that for decades now there's been a huge push for destruction of Israel and the Jews, and he's very sensitive to that, with good reason historically. Ahmadinejad gave the creepiest speech, and gave an interview, I think it was 60 Minutes some years ago. He was in for the Security Council meeting, and he sat down with one of the reporters, I think it was a 60 Minutes reporter, and gave the eeriest, just freakiest, most frightening speech, interview, where he sits very calmly and very convincingly. And this is interesting because this is Ahmadinejad, who we're all talking about was this wild-eyed, dangerous guy. And he makes this really sensible argument that the Holocaust was a crime of the Europeans. And so why is there not a European solution? Why in the world aren't the Germans accommodating the Jews rather than them having to do it in the Middle East? Now, of course, obvious historic biblical arguments for this is the Holy Land passed to the Jews by God, and I'm not going to argue that fight. But it was...
My eyes are rolling out of my head.
I thought they would be, but the Ahmadinejad was like frighteningly calm and compelling when he made this interview. It's just like scary. Good.
Well, you know, what I find interesting about this is the fact that it seems only a matter of time before U.S. policy gets really hammered, because what do we do in this situation?
Obviously, we support Israel like we've always done.
But that's the problem. Republicans in this country seem to think if you don't support Israel's every whim, you're pretty much a Nazi yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
So if Obama does, and the Obama administration, John Kerry, decides that diplomacy with Iran is the right thing to do, is that not going to create another split with politicians in this country.
Jordan, you were mentioning rolling your eyes. I'm mentioning rolling my eyes right now. I mean, in this nation, I believe it's almost a national norm. It's a national pastime of ours to support Israel, regardless of whether they're murdering Palestinian civilians, whether the IDF is committing huge human atrocity. We just have this habit of supporting Israel regardless of their stance on political matters, and I just find it's both a Republican and a Democratic issue. I mean, if you do not support Israel in this country, you are a terrorist.
Remember, all politics is local. The reason for that is the largest diaspora of Jews outside of Israel is in New York in the U.S., and New York is never going to vote Republican, but it's an enormous source for campaign funding and other support. And so that's a reality you have to consider. There are far more folks with links to Israel than with links to the Palestinians in New York with money in their pocket, and that's just a reality.
There are a great deal of Irish Americans in this country, too, but we don't all run around supporting the IRA now, do we?
No, clearly not.
Some of us do.
What are you talking about, Jordan? We're both Irishmen here. What are you trying to say to me?
I do support the production of Irish whiskey, but that's just my contribution.
Personally, I agree fully with the IRA.
Before we digress anymore, I think we have completely solved the issue of Iran, Israel. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the budget, obviously favorite topic. We've got a little clip from Wendy Davis, who is now running for governor.
Who? So
Wendy Davis, yes, governor of Texas.
Abortion Barbie, as you might know.
Yes, pink shoes Wendy Davis. So we'll be back after a break. This is The Devil's Advocate on Raider 88.1. Welcome back to The Devil's Advocate on Raider 88.1. We're now just 8 days away from reaching the debt ceiling on October 17th. And this is basically, I was doing some research, just calling some friends over at the White
Hello.
House.
Hello, you have reached the Executive Office of the President. We apologize, but due to the lapse in federal funding, we are unable to take your call. Once funding has been restored, our operations will resume. Please call back at that time. Thank you.
Can't even leave a message.
They won't even let you leave a message. I was just trying to call my friends at the White House.
Now they're going to have to call him, which is the way it usually works.
Well,
this is great news because the people who I don't want to be getting paid are the ones apparently not getting paid, which is the folks in the White House and on Capitol Hill. So I'm delighted.
I wish we could talk to the White House, because clearly after those last comments I made, I need to talk to someone in the government to let them know that, no, I do not support the IRA. I do not want the FBI putting me on a terrorist list and not allowing me to fly home for Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Only Edward Snowden knows that, so no one will find out. Don't worry.
Jeez, Jordan, you support Iran as well? You support Ahmadinejad?
Yeah, why don't you?
I really
you were,
stuck
you were against the SEALs on the beach in Somalia.
Of
course, if you want to sneak through the airports, apparently you can. All you have to be is 9 years old.
Shh.
Go to Minnesota. Can get on any flight you want. Can even get to Las Vegas.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Well, they'll take anybody in Vegas. That's why.
I guess so. But we digress even
I like
more.
It. So the government shutdown continues. By the way, we reported, I want to correct an error. We had a factual error in last week's show. I feel really bad about this. We said last week that 20% of the government was affected by the shutdown, and that was mistaken. It's actually only 17%. So I apologize for the mistake.
It was a margin of error problem.
Like,
no
see
problem.
What I did there? Did you like that?
Okay. Republicans admitting mistakes? Good Lord. That's one of the signs of the apocalypse.
Egregious errors.
American and National League playing during the regular season. It's a sign of the apocalypse.
Yeah,
exactly.
I can see the gates of hell opening up in Congress. Politicians crying for their mothers. It's over, gentlemen.
Yeah. And look,
over.
Republicans and Democrats in there already. Yeah, how about that?
I would argue against that, especially in this current situation, which is 100% the fault of Republicans. We have government by hostage taking. We have government by crybabies. You lost the Obamacare fight. Get over it. Don't shut down the entire government because you're a bunch of sore losers.
We wouldn't want to fight established law because it's established law. Because what policies would we have? We'd still have segregated schools. We'd have racism. We'd have slavery still as a policy in the country. So, all those things would still be in place if we never challenged accepted laws. So.
You mentioned segregation. Dr. King was famous for saying the way to expose an unjust law is to make them enforce it. And so that's why they did the bus rides. That's why they let the dogs and the fire hoses attack them in Alabama. So if the Republicans want to do that, fine. Then let the law go into effect. Let people sign up. Let them get their affordable health care. And then if they think it's unjust, then someone will do something to change it. Don't shut down the entire government because you're not getting your way.
Touché, Monsieur Lejeune. Nicely done.
As I say, the truth has a liberal bias.
Well, the problem is when we add this in, here's my beef with this law and with this strategy, and I think everybody knows what's going to happen with this law, which is it's not just any law like a policy we'll try out asking the military to stand down and not have civilian casualties. Easy for me to say. I could speak before I got around Evan, who hasn't slept in 4 days. I think it's spreading. But the problem with the health care law, the Affordable Care Act, is that it's going to be a fourth entitlement entrenched. Once this thing is in effect and funded and underway, there's just not going to be any way in the world ever to undo it. And that's why the fight is so, it's not just any law, it's an enormous new fourth entitlement. And everybody knows once that gets entrenched, game over.
So fine, keep having your meaningless, pointless votes in the House of Representatives
to fund all of the rest of the government, which the Democrats are refusing to allow?
They've already had 35-something votes to repeal Obamacare, which have already cost the taxpayers millions of dollars. Keep doing that if you really think the law is that bad.
They've also passed bills to fund national parks, to fund the military, to fund all of the other issues, the programs that are shut down for the government shutdown, and the Democrats won't even bring it to the floor for a vote in the Senate.
Absolutely, because we're not going to... When do you negotiate with terrorists? We don't.
Apparently you
wow.
do, George.
We are not,
apparently you
we,
do.
We are not going to negotiate with people who... are unreasonable. Listen, this is a fight we've already won. The Affordable Care Act already had thousands of hours of debate. It already passed both houses. It's already been upheld as constitutional. The president was reelected in a campaign where Republicans made Obamacare the focal issue. To complain that you're not getting concessions now in a fight that you've already lost is absurd. It makes no sense. That would be like if Kansas came back on Monday and said, you're either going to give us 65 more points or we're going to shut down the entire NCAA. It doesn't make any sense.
I think they did do that because they're whiners. Evan, do you remember how many Republicans voted for the Affordable Care Act in both houses? Do you remember?
I honestly don't.
It was zero, not a single.
Do you remember how many Republicans voted for Bill Clinton's tax increases in the 90s? None. But that policy turned out great. So who cares how many Republicans voted for it? We have a majority. We were elected to a majority, and the vote passed.
Just remember that when the tables turn on Capitol Hill, it'll be interesting to watch.
Well, the tables won't turn for a while because thanks to gerrymandering, the Republicans will have the House for a good long time.
Well, and I also think I like to call it the medieval wing of the Republican Party keeps inserting its foot in its mouth. But
including several prominent Texas politicians, but we'll leave them nameless. Cough Ted Cruz, cough Randy Nagelbauer.
Some of the
You're
interesting
just jealous
things
because you can't read Green Eggs and Ham. Okay, go ahead.
Some of the interesting the talking points of the president, even just the day after the shutdown began, he already was focused on the debt ceiling, which is obviously coming up on October 17th. And we actually have a little clip of him and John Boehner discussing that and the shutdown a little bit. So let's play that.
The only thing preventing people from going back to work and basic research starting back up and farmers and small business owners getting their loans, the only thing that's preventing all that from happening right now, today, in the next 5 minutes, is that Speaker John Boehner won't even let the bill get a yes or no vote because he doesn't want to anger the extremists in his party. That's all. That's what this whole thing is about. And we've heard a lot from congressional Republicans the past couple days saying they don't want this shutdown. Well, there's a simple way to prove it. Send the bill to the floor. Let everybody vote. It will pass. Send me the bill. I will sign it. The shutdown will be over, and we can get back to the business of governing and helping the American people. National parks, monuments, offices would all reopen immediately. Benefits and services would resume again. Hundreds of thousands of dedicated public servants who are worrying about whether they're going to be able to pay the mortgage or pay the car note, they'd start going back to work right away.
You know, when we have a crisis like we're in the middle of this week, the American people expect their leaders to sit down and try to resolve their differences. I was at the White House the other night and listened to the president some 20 times explain to me why you're going to negotiate. Sat there and listened to the majority leader in the United States Senate describe to me that he's not going to talk until we surrender. And then this morning, I get the Wall Street Journal out, and it says, well, we don't care how long this lasts because we're winning. Now, this isn't some damn game. The American people don't want their government shut down, and neither do I. All we're asking for is to sit down and have a discussion and to bring fairness, reopen the government, and bring fairness to the American people under Obamacare. It's as simple as that. But it all has to begin with a simple...
So what do you guys think? Yes or no? Jordan, do you think they're going to pass the debt ceiling limit, raise it?
Oh, I'm sure they will. We always do. But one quick point. I don't know how things work in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but for Speaker of the House Oompa Loompa, he needs to know that in America, you can't have concessions to a fight you've already lost. Obamacare is the law. So no, we're not going to have a discussion about it. It's already the law. You lost. Get over it.
So it's okay for the president to have conversations with the Iranians, but it's not okay to talk to Republicans. I got it. Okay.
I see that the opposite. It's easier for him to negotiate with the Iranians than it is the Republicans.
Wow.
Matthew, what do you think? Are we going to increase the debt ceiling?
Well, I'm going to take a middle ground because I feel like I have to. If not, a Jordan's going to hit me. I don't think we're going to pass the debt limit because I think Republicans are interested in getting reelected. And I recently I saw a poll recently, and congressional approval down about 70%. Republican approval, plummeting down. So
getting close to single digits. Doing the right thing is hard sometimes.
Close. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Republicans are interested in their votes like any good politician should be. And I don't think it's going to get to that point. I think it's a game of chicken to see who backs off first. And I don't think the Republicans are willing to take it to that extreme.
Dr. Kay, what do you think?
We never raise the debt ceiling. It's really unusual to raise the debt ceiling. So, I mean, I think the Republicans need to be interested. Am I right? Isn't that right? We almost never raise the debt ceiling, right?
Actually, Dr. Kay, I have some information right here that we have raised the debt ceiling 74 times since March 1962. And Jordan, you
like,
may...
Like how I teed that up for Matthew.
Jordan, you may... I'm going to tee this up for Jordan because
yeah,
I know
but Republican presidents never raise the debt ceiling. Never.
Dr. K, I'm going to have to give Jordan here some ammunition. The debt ceiling has been raised 4 times under Obama, 7 times under beloved President George W. Bush, 8 times under Clinton, and Jordan, get ready for it, 18 times under Reagan.
Wait a minute. You mean Ronald Reagan, the patron saint of small government conservatism?
God-fearing Reagan?
Are you kidding me? My entire world is collapsing. I had no idea Ronald Reagan didn't actually do any of the things conservatives like to say he did. I'm shocked. Shocked.
Well, before we run out of time completely, we teased it, so we need to at least try to play the clip for you. We have State Senator Wendy Davis announcing that she's going to be running for governor. So let's play that, and we'll try to talk about it a little bit when we come back.
We're here, of course, because we care about Texas. We're here because we care about Texans. And we're here because we believe it's time to give all Texans a voice in their future and a place in Texas' future. Texas is a place where we aim high and we take big risks. We're builders and doers, leaders and dreamers. We love Texas, not only for how good it is, but for how great we know it can be. We're here because we want to see veterans like Joe, who led us in our pledge earlier today, who risked their lives protecting ours, get the support they need when they return to Texas. We're here because we want to fight for Texas jobs and help Texas companies grow. We're here because we want every child, no matter where they start in Texas, to receive a world-class education. I had no real idea what the future looked like, but today I see it pretty clearly. It's staring right at me. It's you. It's all of you. And all of you deserve to have your voices heard. Because our future is brightest when it's lit by everyone's star. And that's why today I am proud to announce my candidacy to be the 48th governor of this great state.
Okay, wait, all of a sudden, Wendy Davis, I have to get this out real fast. She's pro-business. She's pro-jobs. She never even mentions abortion. She's for children. Where did that come from? She sounds like a Republican candidate.
Lord, Dr. K, for someone with so many multiple degrees, it's hard to imagine how you could be so wrong so often.
Wait, did Jordan just say Lord? Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, God. Now I'm in real trouble, aren't I? Wendy Davis, she's a smart woman, something a Republican candidate for governor has never been. Smart, not a woman, per se, but we all know Republicans hate women. She knows her audience. She knows in Texas that she's going to have to kind of move to a little bit to the center. So she's starting that right now. Hopefully conservatives don't play on that abortion thing so much.
She
because
sounded like Rick Perry to the center of my foot.
Wendy Davis is known for other things. Her first filibuster was actually about education. I'd imagine that's what a lot of people know her about. So she's a good fit for Texas.
Well, thanks, guys. Join us next week on the Raider 88.1. This is the Devil's Advocate. Have a good one. Bye.